We'll be taking a look at science research, and science education next on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Bassam Shakashiri, UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry and William T. Evu Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin IDEA. He directs the Initiatives for Science Literacy, and we're really pleased to have him back. He comes by about once a month to talk science issues. Bassam, welcome back.
Happy to be with you again, Larry.
Yeah. If you'd like to join in, by the way, with a question for Bassam, I hope you do. The numbers, we have somebody online already, Jessica. We'll get to you in a minute. But you can call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And before we go to the phones, Bassam, maybe what are your thoughts on the impact of yesterday's election on science and research?
Oh, I think this will be a very important change in what the federal government will do in areas of research and education. In fact, there are very, very important issues. Larry, I'm so glad that so many of my fellow citizens, you included, participated in the process of voting. And frankly, our responsibilities don't stop there. I think we must continue to engage our elected representatives in discussing issues that are important to us. What are some of these issues that are important to me? That's what you're asking me about. There are issues that relate to science, policy. Under that comes matters that relate to promoting innovations for the development of new products that would be green products, that would be safe for the environment. Another issue is the support for basic research and what limitations the federal government might put on supporting basic research. By that, I mean specifically matters that relate to stem cell research, for example. In fact, I'd like to, hear from our listening audience what their thoughts are about what advice and what we should be telling our elected representatives, both in the House and in the Senate, as well as the new administration, as to what we should be doing in areas that relate to immigration.
Science.
For example, immigration issues affect science. How do they have an effect? Well, we have limitations on the number of visas that are issued to people coming in from outside. Our country has relied very heavily on developing talent that is homegrown and talent that comes from outside the country. So these are issues that, in my opinion, are nonpartisan issues. These are issues that affect the well-being of our society, the well-being of our country. We live in the most advanced scientific and technological society in the history of humankind. And as such, we have a responsibility to not only enjoy the benefits of these advances, but to assure that basic research, applied research, that education will be taking place in such a way that will promote the betterment of our society. So there are basic questions that President-elect Obama and the new Congress will have to face, issues that relate to energy. What should we be doing by way of a national policy, not just a federal policy, national policy, indeed international policy that affects the use of energy? You know, pollution, for example, is not a national issue. It is an international issue. Mm-hmm. There are all kinds of other matters that relate to space exploration, issues I alluded to that relate to the environment, issues that relate to health. Regulations from the federal government through the FDA and other agencies about the intake of, for example, carbohydrates that we have, and the effect of obesity on health. A whole slew of issues in science and in technology that must be addressed properly by all of us, and we must really be clear on how we urge our elected representatives to act on our behalf.
Well, let's take some calls. Good points there, Bassam. Jessica in Green Bay has been waiting, so we go to Jessica. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a five-year-old who, obviously, he's in kindergarten, and he has recently been, he's very interested in science-related activities, and he, says when he grows up he wants to be a scientist, and I'm just wondering, aside from school at home, what I can do with him to help to kind of flourish that and enhance it, and so that he continues this love for science that he does have, because I do think that's such an excellent such an excellent area to be so interested in so young.
Well, Jessica, that's a very important question that you to ask, and thank you for bringing this up. Let me say right off the bat, it isn't what you simply said, what can you do aside from school. What parents do is very critical to the development of the individual. All of us are influenced by the environment that we're in school and at home. And so I would be very, very supportive of activities that you and others at home would do with your five-year-old to promote learning and to nurture curiosity. You know, we're all curious, and young kids are more expressive about their curiosity than older kids. They're less inhibited. But I think it's very important to provide an atmosphere where you emphasize reading, emphasize the importance of asking questions, and then recognizing that some of these questions you're not gonna know the answer to those questions, and it's important to say, I don't know, but I'll try to find out. Mm-hmm. That's the process of science. We really explore because we don't know answers, and we try to seek answers. And so I would say emphasize interactions with parts of the environment that you're in that promotes learning, that nurtures curiosity. I said already reading. I think reading is very important.
Mm-hmm.
I would invite you and your five-year-old to visit my website, because we have on my website experiments that you can do at home. You can download them and do them together. They're all safe experiments. They all promote curiosity, as I have been saying. And they're highly selected and carefully selected, you know, because there's a lot of stuff on the internet, and we all have to be careful in what we choose. So I invite you to come to my website, which is www. You know, they all start with www.
Mm-hmm.
And then SciFun, SCIFUN.org, SciFun.org. SciFun.org. You don't have to write it down. You can just say it a couple of times.
You'll remember it.
SCIFUN.org. And then please feel free to communicate with us with questions. We field all kinds of questions from not only Wisconsin, across the country, from around the world. And we do that in a timely manner. There's one type of question that we don't deal with. That is, we don't help the student do their homework problems.
Mm-hmm, right.
That's something that they should have the responsibility to do.
So there you have it.
All right. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Take a look at that website. That's going to be a big help. Jessica, thank you for calling. Well, Dan in Port Washington is up next, so let's go there. Hi, Dan. Thank you for calling.
Hello, and thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
The question really goes hand in hand with Jessica's, very coincidentally. I am an engineering recruiter, and I've been doing this for a good many years. And I've worked for a lot of the high-tech, mainly electrical engineers and engineers in the telecommunications and wireless communications industry, Motorola, Siemens, T-Mobile. And I'm very surprised that there's such a lack of qualified, talented engineers that are American engineers. And by no means is this a it's not a racial statement. What I mean by engineers that grew up in America, whichever creed you come from. That is just, they're not there. And there are so many positions out there that need to be filled, where I would go for literally 1 year not being able to hire anyone other than somebody who was from overseas on a visa. And I heard some outrageous numbers some time ago, and I can't recall if they are, so I'm not sure how accurate they are, but roughly this is, it was like 500,000 engineers India puts out a year versus roughly 80 or 85,000 in the U.S. And so there's more high-tech jobs out there than we can fill, you know, from within. So it would be nice to see the administration come up with some new creative ways of inspiring children in school. And it has to be some sort of grassroots effort where it's science, the sciences are something to get kids more involved at a lower level. With that, I can take my answer or I can take that off the air, or if you like, I can stay.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Dan. I think you make the point for me to say that education is the key for change. Education at all levels, at the elementary school level, at the middle school, high school, college, even graduate school level, and producing a cadre of highly skilled engineers, mathematicians, and scientists is one of the goals that we have as a nation. And but it's also true that we have another goal, that is to produce a learned society, that is learned in the sense that they appreciate what science is, what technology can do for us, that they are science literate in that sense. And all of this comes through education. And by education, I don't mean only being in the classroom. Classroom instruction is very important. Learning in the classroom is very important. But we learn a lot outside the classroom. It's really the environment that we put ourselves in, we put others in our society in. So it's very, very critical, as you say, to have grassroots efforts. And we need national, federal policies that promote learning. I have high expectations that the president-elect will quickly appoint a science advisor and maybe elevate the position of the science advisor to a cabinet level, as some of his predecessors did, again, to emphasize the importance of science and technology in our society. Yes, there are comparisons made between us and other countries in terms of the number of scientists and engineers. And, you know, the truth is, Dan, nobody knows what the right number is for any country. But the truth is also such that we need to produce more skilled scientists and engineers in the United States. And they come not only from our native-born citizens, but they also come from people who emigrate to the United States and who become productive in our society. So we need to be hospitable to others, but we also must promote the development of talent of our youth. The talent in our country is as good as it is anywhere else around the world. But we must be very, very vigilant and very careful in how we do what we do in our school systems, what we do in informal science education settings such as zoos, botanical gardens, recreational centers. Science is all around us, and technology is also part of what we have to learn how to benefit from and learn how to contribute to.
And thank you very much for calling, Dan. Appreciate it. Bassam Shakashiri, our guest, UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry, and William T. Evu, Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin Idea. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, give us a call with your science questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Science on our minds today with Bassam Shakashiri. I'm Larry Mueller. Glad to have you listening in. John in Clinton has a question or comment, so let's go right to John. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I'm in my 50s now, but when I was going through high school, both my parents were engineers, and I had a pretty good feel for engineering, spatial things, and so forth. And I, when I went to college, I wanted to be an engineer, and I started out in that sort of education. And I had a background with algebra, trig, geometry, and so forth. But the thing that killed me in college was I didn't have any background in higher math like calculus and so forth. And eventually that caused me to have to change majors because I couldn't hack it. And I was wondering if there's any movement to improve the teaching in higher math in high schools and even middle schools now.
Yes, there are many steps. In fact, I would say some of them are successful, John, in getting calculus in the curriculum, not only through advanced placement courses, but the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics have a set of standards national standards, they're not federal standards, that and the state of Wisconsin actually has such similar standards that deal precisely with the point that you're talking about. Yes, we need to be learning math, developing skills in math at the high school level, even before the high school level. And we need to be focusing on empowering the teachers to facilitate the learning of math and the learning of science. And this is part of the point that I'm trying to make about the environment, the societal environment that we put ourselves in, and we must put ourselves in to promote learning. Promote learning in areas that deal with mathematics, science, and technology, but frankly, in all other areas. We need skilled people in engineering, in science, and mathematics, but we also need others in society in other professions. And promoting learning and I would quickly add promoting civil interactions among people in our society is very, very important. This is a responsibility that not only the schools have, but we as parents, we as responsible citizens in the community have. So making sure that there are proper math standards in schools is very important. And I would refer you to the recommendations of the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics for what you're talking about, John.
All right. Thank you for calling. Sean in Kentucky, we're on to you now. Hi, Sean.
Hello. How are we doing today?
Great. Thank you for calling.
I have a comment on the the training of our young scientists and the recognition of them. Myself and my son both had troubles early on in school, and they recognized it and diagnosed it as an attention deficit disorder. Now, I had been through this, so I recognized the problem with my son. And it was not an actual disorder with either one of us. It was the fact that we were not being challenged enough. I think that if we could do something to stop the misdiagnosis, and instead of diagnosing these children with attention deficit disorder, notice that they need to be challenged more without being singled out in the classroom, that would
help
promote the learning and the higher education of more of our young students today.
You make a good point, Sean, about the importance of having our school programs be challenging and also securing support from the school system to meet those challenges. It's very important in the development of individuals and groups of individuals to feel comfortable in what they're doing, but that doesn't mean they don't get challenged. A challenge creates further curiosity. It also creates frustration sometimes, and we have to, not sometimes, often, and so we have to learn how to deal with frustration because it's part of the learning that we go through, and it's part of the development that youngsters go through and parents go through. This is why I say parental involvement is very critical in this regard. And the fact that you're aware that your son's situation is one of a challenge rather than one of a different diagnosis, I think that's very important. And so I would urge that you and I and others be challenging in our families, to our families, when we discuss matters relating to science and all matters, and also be understanding that some of the questions that come up, we don't even know the answers to. We should learn how to field those questions so that we learn the proper ways for dealing with challenge.
Yeah. Thanks, Sean, for calling. Bob and Rhinelander, on to you now. Hi, Bob.
Hello. I think the new administration needs to start using the scientific method. For instance, when we give contracts, military contracts, for hundreds of billions of dollars for a weapon system, some percentage of that contract should go to basic scientific research so that we're not relying on Halliburton and other companies to come up with the most profitable method for them to produce the weapon system, but not necessarily the most scientific approach. And for instance, when the auto industry comes in for a bailout, we not give them a tax break, but give them money to put into scientific research to develop a product that everybody wants and the planet needs, instead of building more Hummers or more sports cars with 500 horsepower engines. So, for instance, in every single area, from agriculture to defense to commerce, the money that the federal government uses have a component of devoted to scientific research that will improve the end product and make the end product more effective, at the same time that it's pointing out to students that there's room for scientists all over the government and all over the private sector, so more people will go into science because there's more money going into the system.
Yeah. You make good points, Bob, and if I may rephrase them just a little bit. I think we need to have federal policies that provide incentives for the investments, for the people who receive these federal dollars and use them as investments. We also need accountability for the funds that are being used for either procurement, as you were mentioning before, or for basic research. We need to act honestly. We need to continue to develop trust among each other, so that when someone makes an investment with our precious tax dollars, we know that there is going to be accountability. We also want federal policies to promote innovation in science and technology. These innovations, the yield from investments in innovations can be high, but also can be low. It's a risk that we take, but we have to be taking calculated risks and promoting innovation and sustainability. We need to sustain the quality of life that we have here. All of this has to do with the way by which the federal policies affect the behavior of groups in the private sector or in the public sector, and also of individuals. And that's why I say all of us at the grassroots level should communicate our concerns and to our elected officials and make sure that our voices are heard and that we are collectively taking responsibility for what our elected representatives do on our behalf.
And again, I thank you very much for calling. We got an email from Sheila who says, I have a sophomore daughter who is working toward a biochem degree at UW-Madison. She's doing well in her science classes. She's wondering what to be when she graduates. In other words, what type of job. She's ruled out engineering and lab work in medical school. But what other exciting careers are there for biochem majors? She would certainly consider grad school or law school. Is it a good idea to continue on this biochem path? Any ideas?
I would say it's an excellent idea to continue on this path. But let me just say that, you know, people go to college, among other things, to find out what they want to do.
Yeah,
it's the experience that we have as undergraduates that helps us make a decision, and one should not be too hasty about making a decision as to what they want to do, other than to make the decision that we want to learn. Learning is what it's all about, and pursuing career paths comes along with what we learn, with the experiences that we have. So, getting a degree in biochemistry. Oh, my goodness, there are so many jobs that one can have in the biotechnology areas, in all the life sciences. This century, the 21st century, now has been billed as the century of the life sciences. There are lots of technical jobs in industry, in federal labs, in the private sector, and you know, you mentioned something in the email about maybe going to graduate school. That's a very good thing to consider, too. Of course, to get into graduate school, you have to qualify academically for that. Mm-hmm. And to do that, it would help a lot if the student does a little bit of undergraduate research. But it's also important to recognize that if you have a good background in science and you understand science, you can do just about anything you'd like you'd like to do. You can go to law school. You can go to business school. We need people in who are lawyers and business people who understand what science is, what the role of science in society is, and actually what the limitations of science are. Science is not the answer to all the questions that we have in life. But so I would say the opportunities are fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I would urge your daughter to visit with her advisors. Mm-hmm. We have a very, very excellent advising system at UW-Madison, and I'm sure elsewhere around the country too. But since she is enrolled here, to talk to people in that she's taking courses with, talk to the professors, talk to the graduate teaching assistants, see why they are in graduate school, what do they want to do, what are their aspirations, what are their opinions about going into careers in related to biochemistry.
Good point. So we have a number of students. I'm in the department, a faculty member in the life sciences communication, and many of our students are double majoring or simultaneously majoring in biochemistry and life sciences communication. So a lot of those folks are not interested in lab work, and the communication side of it is also another option, and it can be done with a standard number of credits. So
we need good communicators of science, and so I having a good grounding in science and in chemistry, biochemistry, engineering, whatever, nursing is very important for people who want to be communicators of science.
So you can have her call me, too, and I'll talk to her a little bit. I'll be glad to do that. Abigail in Oconomowoc will give you a chance now. Hi, Abigail.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I was listening, and I was really enjoying this talk. I really agree with Bob and Rhinelander, but what got my attention, and I had a thought, was with the mother of the 5-year-old and wanting to know what she could do at home to get her child, you know, and nurture his interest in science. And I really liked your answer, Bob, or I don't know if I said your name right, but...
The Sam.
Sam, okay. I just was thinking about you're talking about how to keep curiosity and how scientists, you know, not to jump to conclusions, but to keep the love of learning and keep curiosity open, especially at that young age of 5, and how much they imitate, you know, how much children imitate their parents and learn from their environment. And I was just thinking about schools also with your other conversation with the man from Kentucky, about the difference between schools these days and home. And I think it used to be a lot different, didn't it? Between the home, it was more varied. Your experiences need to be varied, and how important it is to be in nature and have these varied experiences. So I find that like today, it seems like there's so much stress on the mechanical part of the reading and not the comprehension part. And there's so much with the computers and test scores. And then at home, they've got the computer and the television. And it just needs to be, it's so important that you vary your children's experience with having tactile and out in nature and just, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an artist, so...
Yeah, I understand what you're... I think we know where you're going.
I agree, Abigail. I think it's very critical to engage in thinking and in conversation and discussion about what's going on in the school. By the way, these conversations take place at home around the dinner table on the weekend when you go to the zoo. When you go to botanical gardens, when you look outside and you see the leaves changing color, why? Mm-hmm. Why are the leaves changing color, and what's going on here? These are some of the questions that we all ask, and we're all curious, and we need to find ways by which our curiosity, this flame of curiosity that we have, does not get extinguished. And that's why I say a supporting environment at home, interacting with the teachers, going to the school, maybe helping organize a family science night twice a semester, maybe 3 times a semester, all kinds of activities like that we can all engage in. In fact, my initiative for science literacy helps participate in family science nights frequently in the Madison area. Mm-hmm. But these kinds of activities are very important, and they are initiated not only by teachers, not by the school board, but by parents and by people who are in the community who care about the quality of education. And that's why I say the interactions in art, for example, whether you're a painter or a piano player or a ballet dancer, there are all kinds of curiosity-driven questions that can be asked about that and dealt with successfully. It is part of the joy of learning, Abigail, that we are able to ask questions and sometimes get answers and sometimes realize that we have to even learn how to ask the question differently.
You know. Well, last month you were in Georgia, North Carolina, Massachusetts, and in Singapore to give Science is Fun public lectures, you know, talking about getting people interested in science. You talk to young and adult audiences, and I know this Saturday you're going to be at November 8th at Hilldale Shopping Mall here in Madison for a one-hour presentation. You get large audiences for these, don't you?
I do. I'm a very lucky person, Larry. What? I have, yes, this Saturday at 2 o'clock at the Hilldale Shopping Mall, some of the students in my group, undergraduate students, are going to be doing a Public Science is Fun presentation. It's free, open to the public, 2 o'clock, Hilldale Shopping Mall. In fact, one of the students is going to do science experiments and play the piano. Again, trying to be in an environment that nurtures the development of talent. My visits across the country and overseas tell me that people everywhere have the same kinds of questions that we are hearing this morning.
And I also want to mention that your 39th annual Christmas lecture, Once Upon a Christmas Cherry in the Lab of Shaka Sheri, is coming up December 6th and 7th. And all right, it's a ways away yet, but still, you need to get tickets. It's free, but
yes, actually, the tickets are moving fast, Larry. We do this program. This is the 39th year that we do it. I'm very proud of that. And it is the first weekend in December, December 6th and 7th at 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. We do it four times. You need a ticket to get in. The tickets are free. We issue tickets to control the size of the crowds. We don't want someone to come in and not have a seat. So if you're interested in getting tickets for the Once Upon a Christmas Cherry in the Lab of Shaka Sheri, please visit our website and click on the holiday lecture, on the Christmas lecture. The website is scifun.org, scifun.org. And I can tell you that the tickets are about two-thirds of the tickets, almost three-quarters of the tickets have been issued already.
Don't waste time.
I'd say do it in the next day or so we can send you these tickets. The request form is on the web, scifun.org. Would be very happy to see people from the listening area. We actually get people who drive in from Chicago, from Minneapolis, different parts of the state to come to see this program. It's very exciting, and it's a lot of fun.
Joseph in Milton, well, it's your turn. Hi, Joseph.
Hey, I just had a question. I came in a little bit later, but it seems to me that there's like an elevation of science and a lot of the technical fields like computer science and mathematics over a lot of other, at the expense of a lot of other areas in college and in just academics. I noticed that history and English and those areas seem to suffer. And I just wonder, why is this elevation of science over these other areas where, as if it has greater importance than like even English, which really underpins every other academic area?
Sure. Well, Joseph, I respectfully disagree with you. It is not a matter of elevating something at the expense of something else. It's a matter of advancing the importance of learning in all disciplines. You can't do science unless you can communicate well, orally and in writing. So you cannot practice science unless you behave ethically. So civic behavior and ethics are very important in all aspects of what we do as members of this society. So if I sounded that I was trying to elevate something, that's your word, not my word. I want to correct that. I am for advancing the quality of learning in all areas. And I'm a chemist. I'm a scientist. I think science and technology are the engines that drive our economy. And we need to promote advancement of science. We need to promote the appreciation of science. That's what my initiative for science literacy is all about, so that we get to understand what science is, what technology is. We get to learn what benefits can be accrued from scientific exploration. We get to learn the limitations of science. Science and technology are not the answers to all the human questions that we have. And we learn how to advance knowledge in scientific ways, but also in other human ways. So, you know, you give me a good opening here to tell you about a conversation that we've had on the air before and a conversation that continues. That is the discussion and the debate about creationism and evolution. That discussion has to be a civil discussion that has to take place among scientists and the public at large. And I'm very happy to say that on Thursday, November 13th, Professor Elliot Sober from the Philosophy Department, I emphasize Philosophy Department at UW-Madison, is giving a public talk on Darwinism and intelligent design. It is a week from today, 7:30 p.m. in the chemistry building. We have the information about that on the web as well. So please, I am a promoter of advancing learning in all areas, all areas.
Bassam, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us. You'll be back in about a month. We'll do this again.
I promise to come back.
All right. Thank you,
Larry.
Thanks very much. And don't forget, his website is www.scifun.org, SCIFUN.org. Lots of great experiments. There's information about the speech, that's the talk, the seminar, that's a week from tonight. There's also, of course, that's where you sign up for his Once Upon a Christmas Cherry in the Lab of Shaka Sherry. You can do it there as well. And always great to have with us. Sorry we didn't get to everybody, but that's usually the way it goes. Well, coming up, we're going to be talking with you about cheese and delicious cheese pairings. Ashley Hubricks, our 61st Allison Dairyland, one of our guests, the other Dave Leonardi, Director of Food Service and Education for the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.